and potentially dangerous detour. At least at altitude, she knew, there would be the benefit of cooler air. Lifting, the speeder rose over the crumpled metal before it, soaring to a necessary height.
For the hell of it, she executed a barrel roll.
A small moment of exhilaration in an otherwise humdrum existence. By the time she came out of it, Nima Outpost was plainly visible just ahead. Nima, center of the galaxy, repository of manifold cultures, offering to its myriad inhabitants a never-ending succession of entertainment, education, and enjoyable distractions. Her smile twisted. Nima was a functioning armpit of a town, and nothing more. A place where no one asked questions, and everyone went quietly about their own business. It was just large and developed enough that if you dropped dead in the street, there was a 50% chance someone might go to the trouble of raking up your body and passing it along to a local protein recycler, or cremator, or burial tech if either of the latter were part of your personal philosophy, and so indicated on your identification, and provided there were funds available to pay for your chosen means of disposal. Otherwise, the deserts of Jakku would take care of the remains in their own good time, and without rendering any opinions on the virtues of the deceased. As long as she could work, Ray had no intention of suffering such a fate. No one does, of course. Death displays nothing if not variety in its methods, which are often surprising and sometimes amusing. She parked her speeder, then unloaded her salvage, and hauled it toward the community structure that had been built for that purpose, and was open to all. No one offered to help her with the heavy load. In Nima, youth and gender were no barrier to neighborhood indifference. Once inside the tented, shaded structure, she unpacked the results of the day's work, leaned her staff against a work table, and began cleaning. When it came to salvage, appearance did matter. Compared to the strenuous work she had put into its recovery, a bit of polishing and buffing added little to the overall effort. Around her, other scavengers were doing the same. Humans and non-humans communicated freely, commenting on one another's findings and exchanging gossip, mostly in the local patois. They filled a good deal of the available workspace. When not chatting amiably with one another, they strove to learn where their competitors were finding their best salvage. Also, they were not above stealing from one another when the opportunity presented itself. Ray kept a close eye on her goods. Glancing up from her work, her gaze happened to fall outside the tents. The biped whose movements had caught her eye was human. A woman, clad in wrappings of deep maroon that shaded to purple. A band of turquoise makeup across her eyes and forefingers indicating her clan. Standing on a ship's open ramp, she surveyed her surroundings. A moment later, a similarly clad and decorated boy appeared and moved to join her. A domestic exchange ensued, during which the adult did something to the child's hair. Returning to her work, Ray was only partially aware that the brush she was using on a narrow piece of salvaged electronics had begun to imitate the same caressing, grooming movement of the woman's fingers. Coming up beside her, one of Unkar Plutt's assistants barked at her and gestured in her direction with his staff, implying it would be in her best interests to focus on her work and not allow herself to be distracted. Without another glance in the direction of the mother and child, Ray returned to her own work. Finishing sooner than she expected, she made her way across the tent to the exchange booth. Fashioned from a small, salvaged sandcrawler, dark brown from rust and age, it was surrounded by piles of recently purchased components. In contrast to the dominant tenting, it boasted a solid, suspended ceiling in the form of another piece of salvaged metal. In Nima, the most disagreeable part of surrendering salvage was taking payment.
This was due not to the quality of the food one received as payment, but to the nature of the individual distributing it. The lumpish shape seated slightly above and in front of her was not human. The Krolut's stout build terminated at the top in a thick, fleshy, hairless skull, whose most prominent feature was a broad, flat nose. The nasal cavity extended all the way up and into the bald, metal-capped head. A separate layer of flesh flowed downward like a second neck. Loose black pants were tucked into heavy work boots, while the long-sleeved, dun-colored shirt struggled to contain additional layers of neck. Half a dozen bi-colored metal plates hung from his neck and shoulders to just below the thick knees. Muscles were hidden beneath an additional layer of blubber. While she knew he looked forward to their occasional business dealings, she could not say the same, since that would have required not only listening to him, but looking at him. She always strove to keep their encounters as brief as possible. Unkar Plutt, on the other hand, was delighted to extend their encounters for as long as she could stand it. He always took his time when examining her pieces, letting his gaze rove slowly over everything she put before him, making her wait. Only when the bounds of common courtesy had been markedly surpassed did he deign to acknowledge her presence.
Ray, a decent offering, if nothing remarkable. Today you get a quarter portion.
She did not give him the pleasure of seeing her disappointment, just took the pair of packets that appeared in the transfer drawer in front of him. One transparent package contained beige powder. The other, a more solid slab of something green.
That's my girl.
Plutt commended her. Not replying, she turned and left, moving as quickly as she could without alerting him to the fact that his presence disgusted her. She could feel his eyes all over her until she exited the big tent. Out on the salt flats of Jakku, the only place to shelter from the sun was inside something one had built oneself. Ray's speeder was an insignificant speck against the fiery setting mass as she slowed on approach to her residence. Climbing down, she left it parked where it had stopped. There was no reason to secure it. Few came this way. Those who did, including the pirates and bandits who haunted the desert wastelands, wouldn't waste time trying to steal a vehicle as dated and banged up as her transport. Unloading, she gathered her belongings and headed for the makeshift entrance that led into the belly of the half-destroyed AT-AT Walker. It might be an ancient, rotting, rusting example of now useless military might. But to Ray, it was home. After carefully unloading her gear and supplies onto the homemade cabinets and shelves, she remembered to make a scratch mark on one interior wall of semi-malleable material. She had long since stopped bothering to count the scratches, which now numbered in the thousands. Bits and pieces of homemade decor ornamented isolated alcoves and corners. Here, a handmade doll fashioned from reclaimed orange flight suit material. There, a cluster of dried desert flowers. On the far end of the bed insert, a pillow that had cost her a day's work. It wasn't much, but where such examples of defiant individuality had been placed, they softened the drabness of their surroundings. Green slab stuff sizzled in a makeshift cook pan. Opening the packet of beige powder, she dumped it into a tin half full of water. A brief stir activated the mixture, which promptly expanded and solidified into a loaf of something like bread. She slid the cooked meat off its pan and onto a plate,
then slipped the loaf out of its container. Taking a seat, she dug into both, as if she had not eaten in weeks. It seemed that these days all too many meals were like that. When she had finished, she picked up the plate and licked it dry before setting it aside. Rising, she moved to a window that looked in the direction of Nima. The signature contrail of a single ascending ship streaked the flat dark blue of the evening sky like chalk on slate. Wiping her mouth, she turned to a shelf where an old, badly damaged rebellion helmet rested. She stared at it for a moment, then picked it up and put it on. Still wearing the helmet, she made her way outside into the cooling air. "Nothing much to see tonight," she reflected. "The sun going down, tomorrow morning the sun coming up, and so on to another day, not unlike its predecessor and the interminably repetitive ones that had gone before." She tried to think of something else. Something that had changed. Something that seemed different, if only to keep her mind from atrophying. But there was nothing. Nothing new. Certainly nothing to daydream about. On Jakku, things never changed. There was the occasional mention in the market of a rising new power in the galaxy. An organization that called itself the First Order. Determined, relentless. Nobody seemed to know much else about it. Not something to worry about here, she knew. Whatever it was, whatever it represented, it wouldn't come to this backward, out-of-the-way world. Nobody came to Jakku. She was alone. Something squealed that was not shifting sand. Rising quickly, she removed the helmet. The sound could not have come from within its long-dead electronics. Even as she inspected the headpiece, the noise was repeated. A hysterical, panicked beeping. Whirling, she ran back into the dwelling and emerged a moment later, clutching her staff. The beeping was sounding continuously now, no less frantic for its frequency. Reaching the top of a nearby dune, she found herself gazing down at a sight as curious as it was unexpected. Trapped in a net of local organic material, a small spherical droid was attempting to escape its prison, an effort rendered extremely difficult by the fearful mechanical's total absence of limbs. Mounted atop a squat, four-footed, square-helmeted lugabeast, a native Tito was struggling to constrain and reel in the legless but overactive and insubordinate droid. When uncertain as to anything taking place on Jakku, Ray knew it was always reasonable to assume that something untoward was happening. At least until she understood the particulars of the confrontation she was witnessing, it was only right to call it to a momentary halt.
Talama Pakwal!
Motion ceased as both the Tito and BB-8 stopped wrestling and turned to peer up at her.
Pakwal! Zatanatapanapu!
Making an effort to simultaneously control both its heavy-headed mount and its captive, the Tito yelled back through the mouthpiece of the goggle-eyed helmet that covered its reptilian cranium. Its attitude was decidedly unconciliatory, even threatening. Meanwhile, the hovering head of the imprisoned droid swiveled rapidly back and forth, trying to watch both Tito and human simultaneously. Ray immediately took offense, not only at the Tito's tone, but at its speech, which far exceeded the bounds of common courtesy that existed between fellow desert dwellers and made difficult coexistence possible. The Lugabeast rider knew better, and its intemperate words were enough to decide her on a course of action. Descending the far side of the dune, she drew her knife and began hacking at the netting.
"Namego!" she growled. "Tabina Kotokwal!"
Observing that it was on the verge of losing its prize, the Tito unleashed a stream of indigenous invective. None of it had the slightest effect on Ray, who continued cutting away at the mesh until the native promulgated a slur that would have been vile in any language. Pausing in her work,
She turned to face the tightly clothed creature, gesturing with her knife and fairly spitting a reply. No, Ma! Anota Mata Zatana! Long and drawn out, the Tito's response to this would have been unprintable on any of 100 civilized worlds. Turning the metal-enclosed head of its mount, the unpleasant scavenger departed in the opposite direction. As soon as the native was a safe distance away, BB-8 rolled clear of the netting and began beeping loudly and challengingly in its direction. Shh! Ray hastened to quiet the droid. Don't tempt it. Enough insults can override anyone's common sense. Even a Tito's. BB-8 instantly went silent. Together, the two of them tracked the Luggabees until it and its rider had vanished from view. An electronic query drew her attention. Ray knelt down beside the questioning droid.
He's just a Tito. A local. Not so unlike me, really.
Her expression twisted.
Except this one was particularly impolite. Wanted you for parts.
Leaning forward slightly, she studied the top of the droid's head.
Your antenna's bent.
As she examined the scored markings on her softly beeping new acquaintance, her interest continued to deepen.
Where'd you come from?
The droid beeped a reply. Pursing her lips, Ray shook her head.
I don't know what that means.
A string of beeps followed. This time, she smiled.
Oh, classified. Really? Well, me too. Big secret.
Rising, she started back toward her dwelling.
I'll keep mine and you can keep yours.
Raising an arm, she gestured.
Nema Outpost is that way. Stay off Kelvin Ridge. Keep away from the sinking fields up north, or you'll drown in the sand. Otherwise, you should be okay. The closer you get to Nema, the less likely you are to run into a marauding Tito.
Beeping softly, the droid started to follow, halting only when she turned on it sharply.
Don't follow me. You can't come with me. I don't want anyone with me. You understand?
More beeping, distinctly anxious this time. She grew angry.
No! And don't ask me again. I'm not your friend. I don't have any friends. This is Jakku. Nobody has friends here. Just fellow survivors.
Turning once more, she moved off with longer strides. The beeping that sounded now was laced with unmistakable desperation, poignant enough to make her stop. Turning once more, she looked back at the imploring droid. She didn't like it. Him. Her fondness for most machinery extended to its trade equivalent in food. But she found herself feeling sorry for this small, helpless droid. At least, she told herself, this one seemed harmless enough. And notwithstanding her warning, there was no guarantee that the Tito might not come back. She nodded reluctantly in the droid's direction. Immediately, it rolled up beside her. Together, they headed for her abode.
In the morning,
she said firmly,
you go.
A responsive beep acknowledged her decision.
Fine. You're welcome.
Another beeping, which made her laugh.
Yes, there's a lot of sand here. BB-8? Okay. Hello, BB-8. My name is Ray. No, just Ray.
Still more beeping, and her smile disappeared.
Look, you're not going to talk all night, are you? Because that won't work. You know how humans recharge? We don't plug in. We sleep.
A second acknowledging squeal.
Good. Keep that in mind and we'll get along till morning. Quietly.
A single beep left hanging in the dry desert air. They disappeared behind the dune.
Chapter 3.
The holding cell had no bars. They were not needed. There was nowhere aboard the ship for a prisoner to go. Even had there been, the single occupant was shackled tightly to his chair, unable to do more than turn his head. Poe knew he should have been flattered. They were taking no chances with him. But all he could think about was how he had failed his mission. So sunk was he in depression that he scarcely reacted when they beat him. Delivered with practiced skill, designed to hurt but not result in permanent damage, the blows fell intermittently at different times of the day on different parts of his body. He did his best to shut out the pain, much as he succeeded in shutting out the questions. What he did not know was that they were merely a softening up, an introduction to his principal interrogator. That formidable individual arrived in due course. Recognizing him from the attack on the village, Poe threw himself against his bonds in a final supreme effort to break free. Demanding the last of his strength, the failure left him completely exhausted. It was just as well, he consoled himself. Fighting against the figure now standing before him would be counterproductive at best. Fighting and resistance, however, were two different things, and he resolved to focus what remained of his energy on the latter. Doubtless his inquisitor could sense his determination. Was the masked figure smiling? There was no way to tell. While his interrogator's greeting was far from challenging, the sarcasm underlying Kylo Ren's words was plain enough.
I had no idea we had the best pilot in the Resistance on board. Revealing yourself through your futile attempt on my life was foolish. Revenge is little more than an adolescent concession to personal vanity. Even had you not been slow and ill-prepared, Tekka was already dead. Comfortable.
Poe did his best to sound nonchalant.
Not really. He gestured as best he could with a shackled hand. The accommodations leave something to be desired.
I regret the necessity. They are gratuitous in my presence. But those others who have made your acquaintance possess only the most primitive abilities, and further defiance on your part would demand their unnecessary exertions.
He bent toward the prisoner.
None of this unpleasantness need be necessary. We both wanted the same thing from the old man. Perhaps he was more forthcoming with you than he was with me.
Poe made a show of seriously considering the proposal before replying phlegmatically.
Might want to rethink your technique. Hard to get cooperation from a dead man.
Ren stood back, looming over the prisoner.
A truism on which you might personally wish to reflect. It is pathetic, though, is it not? You and I both in pursuit of a ghost.
His tone darkened.
Where did you put it?
Poe stared up at him innocently.
Where did I put what?
Please. All time is transitory, and mine especially so. This will go more quickly and less awkwardly if we dispense with childish nonsense.
Poe readied himself.
The Resistance will not be intimidated by you.
As you wish, then. There is no resistance in this room. Only the pilot Poe Dameron and I.
A hand extended toward the shackled prisoner. Silent agony followed soon after.
Tell me,
Ren murmured.
Tell me.
General Hux was waiting for him. As expected, the interrogation had not taken long. The senior officer did not have to ask if it had been successful. No matter how determined the prisoner, no matter his or her individual resolve, Ren's questioning invariably produced the same results. The metal-covered face regarded the general, the voice that emanated from behind it dispassionate.
The pilot does not have it. The map to Skywalker's location is in a droid. an ordinary BB unit.
Hux was plainly pleased, though that meant nothing to Ren. That makes it easy, then? The directions are in a droid, and the droid is still on the planet.
Even a single planet offers innumerable places for concealment.
Hux did not dispute this. True enough. But the world below us is primitive. A simple droid will gravitate towards support facilities for its kind. Of these, Jakku has few enough.
He turned away, planning.
With any luck, we may not even have to search for it ourselves.
Even to a droid, Nima Outpost was unimpressive. BB-8 took it all in, recording every visual in detail for possible future reference. Nothing the droid saw was encouraging. Having unloaded him from her speeder, Rey once more hefted the satchel that bulged from a new day's scavenging. Eyeing the indecisive droid, she nodded toward one part of town.
There's a trader in Bay 3, name of Horvins. Don't be put off by his appearance. He's actually a pretty decent sort. Might be willing to give you a lift, wherever you're going. So...
She paused a moment, considering, and then shrugged.
Goodbye.
She had only taken a few steps when a series of beeps caused her to look back and laugh.
Oh, really? Now you can't leave. I thought you had somewhere special to be.
Plaintive and anxious, the electronic response was nothing like what she expected. Retracing her steps, she knelt to stare into the droid's dark eye.
Don't give up. He still might show up. Whoever it is. Classified. Believe me, I know all about waiting.
The droid beeped, questioningly.
For my family. They'll be back. One day.
She tried to smile, and failed miserably. BB-8 moved as close to her as protocol permitted, and beat softly.
It caused her to rise suddenly, plainly annoyed by the query.
What? No, I'm not crying.
This time, when she started off, she did not look back. She didn't have to. Ignoring her admonitions, the droid tagged along, beeping continuously, irritating her with distressing consistency.
I was not,
she continued to insist.
Just because a little water flows from a human eye doesn't mean it's crying. Check your info dump.
She rubbed at the eye in question.
Nothing but a piece of grit. This whole world is nothing but a big piece of grit.
The droid's comment on this left her not knowing whether to laugh or cry.
No, BB-8, I don't have a world in my eye.
But her eyes continued to water as she made her way deeper into town, and she gave up trying to persuade the droid to leave her alone.
Maybe one day things will change,
she told herself absently as she waited her turn in the line. Like the hot, dry desert wind, reality cut in as she stepped up to the front and unloaded her goods. She hid the wave of revulsion that swept through her. Maybe one day, before the universe died, Unkar Plutt would take a bath. The merchant made his usual show of inspecting her salvage. But his attention was actually on the rotund droid that had parked itself behind her and slightly to one side.
Two interlifts. I'll give you one quarter portion for the pair.
She reacted immediately.
Last week they were a half portion each, and you said you were looking for more.
She indicated the two devices.
Here's two of them.
Plutt's flesh rippled.
Conditions have changed.
He hefted one of the components and squinted at it.
Besides, this one is missing a membrane. I don't like paying for incomplete equipment.
Before she could object further, he leaned forward.
But what about the droid?
What about him?
She asked guardedly.
Is he with you?
Plutt smiled.
which, if anything, was worse than his usual expression of indifference.
I'll pay for him. He looks functional.
Behind her, BB-8 began to beep apprehensively.
Ray ignored him.
Intrigued. He might be.
Why then didn't you offer him up together with the Interlifters?
Plutt was drooling. Normally that was a cue for her to flee while she still had control of her stomach. This time she ignored the bile.
As you say, he's functional.
She spoke with studied indifference.
I can always use a functioning droid around the house.
Plutt begged to differ.
This one? Of what use could it be to someone like yourself? It has no service limbs.
Maybe I enjoy the company. You said you'd pay. How much?
His pleasure apparent, Plutt could not contain himself.
60 portions.
Somehow she managed to restrain her reaction to a single muscular twitch. 60 portions would feed her for a very long time. Time enough to do other work that had been long neglected. Time enough to relax and rest her bones. Time enough for... Leisure was a word that had long ago been dropped from her vocabulary. Beeping furiously, BB-8 nudged her from behind. The droid had been following the conversation from the beginning and was not liking the turn it had taken. Not at all.
Quiet, she muttered.
Either the droid didn't understand, or else he was willfully ignoring her instructions. Having little patience with obstreperous mechanisms, she reached over and thumbed a sequence on his head. Immediately, that portion of the droid slid sideways until it made contact with the ground. No further beeps issued from the speaker. Artificial consciousness was absent now, and it was just a quiescent piece of machinery, a spherical piece of junk. But apparently one that held some value, she told herself. How much value? Before agreeing to anything, it behooved her to find out.
100 portions.
Plutt was patently surprised by the counter-demand, and just as obviously unhappy. Not that he was a stranger to argument. Scavengers wouldn't be scavengers if they didn't frequently dispute the value of their funds. It was just that he had not expected it from this one, especially considering what he had already offered. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered right now except gaining possession of the droid. So he smiled anew.
Your audacity always has exceeded your size, Ray. I've always admired that about you.
Yeah, I'm wonderful. Do we have a deal or not?
She stayed expressionless.
How can I resist the force of your personality?
He replied in mock alarm.
100 it is.
Atop his battered throne, he turned.
As you can imagine, it will take me a moment to assemble your payment. Please, be patient.
Ray could hardly believe it. He'd accepted the counteroffer. She had only made it to see the expression on his face, never dreaming he would readily accede.
100 full portions?
Eagerly, she opened her satchel in preparation for receiving the expected bounty. This was one heavy load she was not going to mind toting. Her elation extended as far as making small talk with the detested Plutt.
What are you going to do with the droid? He travels well, but as you pointed out, he doesn't have any service limbs.
Oh, I'm not going to keep him for myself.
Plutt spoke absently as he continued to stack full nutrition portions beside his seat.
Certain parties have been asking around about a droid like that. None of my business what they want it for. Smart traders don't delve deeply into their customers' motivations.
He glanced over at her.
If I find out, Indeed, a courtesy of letting you know. Meanwhile, I'd like to think this exchange will be good for both of us. That's the best kind of business, after all.
As he started placing packets into the transfer drawer, she moved to take them.
That's my girl.
His tone oozed something more than false possessiveness. There was an eagerness in his voice that was something new, even for Unkar Plutt. An eagerness that all but translated into triumph. It took a real effort for her to let go of the first pile of food packets and draw her hand back. She glanced down at the inert droid, thinking hard. At last, she looked back at the merchant.
Actually, the droid's not for sale. I made a mistake.
Willing herself to do so, she shoved the brace of food packets to the back of the transfer drawer. Plutt was beside himself. Any thought of restraint gone. As his voice rose, other scavengers in the room looked up from their work. Even for the irritable merchant, the outburst was exceptional.
Sweetheart!
He bellowed, his tone belying his choice of words.
We already had a deal!
Grinning tightly, she echoed his earlier observation.
Conditions have changed.
Reaching down, she reactivated the droid. BB-8's head immediately swung up into its natural dorsal position. Had the droid possessed eyelids, it would have blinked.
Conditions have...
Plutt looked like he was going to explode.
You think you can be snide with me, girl? You think you can play games here? Who do you think you are?
She drew herself up with as much pride as she could muster.
I am an independent operator, scavenger of the Metal Lands, free of debt and beholden to no one. Least of all to a small-time trader named Plutt.
You are...
The merchant tried to control himself.
You have nothing! You are nothing!
On the contrary, I just told you who I am. As to what I have, that would be my freedom and my pride.
Murmurs of assent rose from behind her, from the vicinity of the work tables. She had said aloud what her colleagues and compatriots, regardless of species, all wanted to say, but dared not. At least not to Plutt's ugly face. All pretense of deference gone, Ray took a step toward the chair and shot the merchant behind it so steely a glance that he visibly flinched. BB-8 reacted with a beep of admiration. Resisting the urge to give the sphere a reassuring pat, Ray concluded the day's dealings with Unkar Plutt.
The droid is not for sale.
With that, she turned and headed toward the big tent's exit. The excitedly beeping droid pacing her effortlessly. Plutt watched her go. He was starting to calm down, his mind working systematically. The confrontation had almost escalated beyond repair. Such loss of control was not like him. In the course of negotiations, he would often shout, yell, occasionally pound the service shelf in front of him. But all the time, he was calculating. It was all about the business. All about the profit. Never personal. Not even now, when it involved the lovely but disrespectful Ray. That was something of a pity, he mused, as he picked up a communicator. A voice answered. Ignoring the newly arrived scavenger who had tentatively approached, Plutt turned away and lowered his voice.
I have a job for you.
With a free hand, he slammed the service portal opening shut, leaving the scavenger holding his bag of goods and staring blankly at the merchant's back. Slumped and shackled in the seat, Poe was still breathing. Beyond that, He no longer cared much what happened to him. It wasn't his fault, he kept telling himself. For an ordinary person, no matter how strong they thought themselves, resisting the probing of a creature like Kylo Ren was simply not possible. He had tried. There was no shame in the failure. He didn't much care what they might do with him now, though he could guess. Having given up what little of value he had possessed, he was no longer of any use to them. There was nothing about X-Wing weapons systems the First Order did not already know, and as a mere pilot, he would not be expected to know anything about military movements or tactics. He had rendered himself expendable. No, not expendable. Less than that. He was now extraneous. As such, he doubted they would keep him alive. He would not receive food, but he might become it. His head came up as the door to the holding cell whooshed open, and a stormtrooper entered. At least, Poe mused, it would be over soon. He could look forward to freedom from any further tormenting thoughts. The trooper's words to the room's single guard surprised him, however.
I'm taking the prisoner to Kylo Ren.
Poe sagged in his seat. What more did they want from him? Everything, anything of value that he had known, was now known to them. Had they overlooked some line of questioning? He could not think of one. But then, at the moment, his mind was not functioning properly. The guard wondered, too.
I was not told to expect you. Why would Ren wish to question the prisoner outside the cell?
The new arrival's voice darkened.
Do you dare to question Kylo Ren's motives?
No, that's not what I meant.
Without another word, the guard proceeded to release the prisoner from his shackles. It took twice as long as it should have, since in his sudden nervousness, he kept fumbling the task. Procedure demanded that the trooper keep his weapon trained on the prisoner at all times, as together they made their way down the corridor. Another time, another place, Poe might have considered making a grab for it, but he was far too weakened to contemplate such a likely fatal effort. In any case, the trooper seemed as competent as all his kind, and gave no indication of relaxing his vigilance. A rough prod with the weapon's muzzle caused Poe to stumble and nearly fall. So exhausted was he that he could not even raise an objection or mutter a curse.
Turn here!
The trooper commanded sharply. The passageway they entered seemed unusually narrow and poorly lit. In contrast to the one they had just left, they encountered no personnel. No troopers, no techs, no general crew. A gloved hand clutching his shoulder brought him to a halt. Poe took in his claustrophobic surroundings. An odd place to carry out an execution, he thought resignedly. Apparently, they were not going to make a show of him. The trooper's words came low and fast.
Listen carefully and pay attention. You do exactly as I say, I can get you out of here.
Within Poe's wounded brain, something like cognizance stirred. He turned and gawked at the trooper's mask. If... what? Who are you? In lieu of reply, the trooper removed his helmet. A helmet that had been cleaned of the blood that had been smeared across it by the flailing hand of a dying trooper far below, in the course of a minor battle on an obscure corner of the planet Jakku.
Will you be quiet and just listen to me? This is a rescue! I'm helping you escape!
When a stunned Poe didn't respond, the trooper shook his shoulder firmly.
Can you fly a TIE fighter?
Poe finally stopped gaping at the dark-skinned young man and found his voice.
What's going on here? Are you with the Resistance? What?
The trooper indicated their surroundings.
That's crazy! How long do you think anyone with Resistance sympathies would last on a ship like this? You're under continuous observation. You so much as wink the wrong way, and before you know it, the side techs are all over you. No! I'm just breaking you out.
He cast a nervous glance up and down the narrow, dim corridor.
Can you fly up?
Having long since surrendered anything resembling hope, it took Poe more than a moment to begin regaining it.
I can fly anything. Wings, no wings, push, pull, echo force, in or out of light speed. Just show it to me. But why are you helping me?
The trooper spoke while staring nervously down the corridor.
Because it's the right thing to do.
Poe shook his head, not buying it for a second.
Buddy, if we're gonna do this, we have to be honest with each other.
The trooper stared at him for a long moment.
I need a pilot.
Poe nodded. A wide grin broke across his face.
Well, you just got me.
FN-2187 was taken aback by Poe's quick agreement.
Yeah? Yeah,
Poe insisted.
We're gonna do this. If you can get me into something that flies, that is.
The trooper slipped his helmet back over his head. For an instant, the whole Enterprise teetered on the edge of believability.
Was he being set up? Poe wondered.
No longer needed. Was he being made the subject of some cruel psychological trial, only to be thrown away at the conclusion? Yet there was something about the trooper that made Poe feel he could trust him. His manner, his look. There was something that said, throw in your lot with this one, and you won't be sorry that you did. The trooper pointed back in the direction they had come.
This way! And stop looking so positive! Optimism doesn't fit a prisoner's profile.
Poe obediently lowered his head and adopted as morose an expression as possible. Once, as they re-entered the main corridor, a hint of a smile broke through, to be quickly quashed. The longer no one intercepted them and no one questioned their passage, the more Poe dared to allow himself to hope. What they were attempting bordered on the insane. Escaping from the custody of the First Order, much less from inside a Star Destroyer, was nearly impossible. Nearly. The very unfeasibility of it worked in their favor. He could not be a prisoner trying to escape, because prisoners simply did not escape. Just as stormtroopers did not desert their posts to facilitate such flight. Ordinary troopers were one thing. The group of officers coming toward them as they entered the hangar was quite something else. Face still resolutely aimed downward, Poe tensed and fought not to meet their eyes. Beside him, the trooper nudged him gently with the end of his blaster and muttered tightly,
"Stay calm! Stay calm!"
Poe swallowed as the officers drew near and walked on by.
"I am calm,"
Poe whispered.
"I was talking to myself,"
the trooper explained as they maintained their methodical tread toward the far side of the enclosure.
"Oh, boy,"
Poe whispered, this time to himself.
"Act nervous,"
the trooper advised him.
"As if you're being sent to your doom."
Poe swallowed.
"Thanks for the tip."
The craft they were approaching was a Special Forces TIE fighter. Poe couldn't help it. Raising his gaze, he raked the ship with his eyes. If one discounted its origins, its dark angles took on a deadly beauty. No one stood near it. No techs, no maintenance workers, and no guards. What reason could there be to have to post a guard beside a ship inside a Star Destroyer? The entry hatch was open. Open and inviting. He had to will himself not to break into a run. There was no telling if the fighter was functional, or if it was being monitored by automated hangar security. The hangar's atmosphere was contained, of course. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to speculate about such things, since he would be a cold, dead protein crisp floating in space.
How to get the massive access portal open? One thing at a time,
he told himself. Get to the ship first, then get on board, find out if it was operational. A tech droid came toward them, trundling along the open floor. He could sense the trooper at his side tightening up. They maintained their pace and direction.
So did the droid. It was very close now.
its optics easily able to resolve the fine details of prisoner and escort.
What would they do if it started to ask questions?
Questioning a prisoner and guard, not being a part of the tech droid's protocol, it continued on past, without beeping so much as a casual query.
Chapter 4.
The interior of the TIE fighter was spotless. Droids and techs had done their work well, leaving it ready for pilot and gunner. It was a true pilot who now settled himself into the cockpit command seat. As to the other missing crew member, that remained to be seen. Slipping free of his bloody, confining jacket, Poe examined the controls laid out before him. Some were familiar from his professional studies of First Order ships, others from perusing details of old Imperial craft. What he didn't recognize immediately, he felt sure he could work around. A modern fighter like this one would be naturally forgiving, its computational components engineered to compensate for pilot miscues and oversights. He was relying on the likelihood that the ship itself would automatically correct for any minor mistakes in judgment. Minor mistakes? He still had to fly the damn thing. Movement behind him caused him to glance back over his shoulder. Having shed his helmet, the trooper who had freed him was settling himself into the gunner's seat and struggling to make sense of his surroundings. Poe tried to project reassurance as he punched instrumentation. A whine began to rise from the ship's stern.
"I always wanted to fly one of these things," Poe said.
"Can you shoot?"
"Anything designed for ground troops, I can. Blasters."
Poe reflected that his companion sounded less than confident.
"Same principle, only the results are a lot more expansive. The toggle on the left should be to switch between cannons, missiles, and pulse. Use the instrumentation on the right to aim. Let the auto-targeting help you, and triggers to fire."
Leaning slightly forward, the trooper tried to absorb what he was seeing, as well as what the former prisoner was telling him. There were far more controls than those he was hearing about. Which were the ones he really needed to worry about?
"This is very complicated," he confessed. "And I'm not sure where to start. Maybe if we waited a moment or two so you could clarify a few things?"
Freed from his shackles, then freed from captivity, Poe was not in a mood that allowed for a period of leisurely instruction. For one thing, he doubted he was going to have the opportunity. Any second now, someone was going to wonder why the Special Forces fighter was lighting its engines with the hatch closed.
"No time!" he yelled back. "Consider this on-the-job training!"
Working only semi-familiar controls, he persuaded the ship to lift. Unfortunately, it was still tethered to support lines. Cables twanged as they went taut, holding the TIE fighter to the deck. Inside the main control room for Hangar 6, a confused tech turned from his console to the officer passing close behind him.
"Sir, we have an unsanctioned departure from Bay 2.
The First Order colonel halted, turned, and stared out the sweeping port that overlooked the hangar floor. At the far end, a fighter could be seen struggling to decouple from its support cabling. Neither the apparent pre-flight movements nor the fact that the cabling was still engaged made any sense. That they were occurring simultaneously suggested a serious miscarriage of duty. Or the inconceivable.
"Get me communications with that vessel! Alert ship command! Notify General Hux and stop that fighter!"
Throughout the finalizer, confusion expanded exponentially. Departments were alerted that normally went unexercised while the ship was in orbit around peaceful planets. Off-duty personnel were roused to the sound of alarms ringing on their personal communicators. Contradictory commands flew back and forth between bemused sections. A large majority of those alerted responded slowly and reluctantly, confident that what they were responding to was nothing more than a drill. No such illusions afflicted the hurriedly assembled troopers who were struggling to push the heavy weapons platform into position on the hangar deck.
The musical spang of cables snapping away from the TIE fighter pressed them to move even faster. The officer in charge was shouting, but no command could ready the weapon any quicker than its energizing program allowed. It would take another moment or two to fully power up. Seeing the threat that was being prepared on the other side of the hangar, Poe proffered his companion some urgent advice.
Okay, now would be a good time to start shooting.
Behind him, the deflecting trooper's gaze wandered desperately over the plethora of controls laid out before him.
I'll do my best. I'm not sure I can...
A massive wave of blast from the TIE fighter's primary arsenal filled the hangar. Internal weapons emplacement shattered. Troopers and mobile cannon were obliterated. Parked TIE fighters were reduced to rubble. Fragments of fuselage and wings bouncing off the deck, ceiling, and walls. One collective burst demolished the hangar control room. Where moments before there had been calm, now there was bedlam, alarm, and fire. The latter was extinguished when the fighter lifted, spun on its axis, and Poe activated the TIE fighter's departure mode. It had been locked down by the hangar controllers, but when FN-2187 imploded the operations center, all electronics that were usually controlled from there had gone neutral. The Special Forces TIE fighter had no trouble resolving the problem, automatically issuing the necessary directives.
Sorry, boys!
The trooper seated in the gunner's chair yelled, even though there was no one save Poe to hear him. Accelerating, the Special Forces craft blasted clear of the Star Destroyer's flank, leaving in its wake a splay of smashed TIE fighters, dead troopers, and an assortment of ruined accessory material. Poe was becoming more and more comfortable with the vessel's instrumentation. In a very short period of time, his mood had swung from fatalistic to exulting. Not only was he alive, not only was he free, he had a ship. And what a ship! A Special Forces TIE fighter. He was certain of one thing as he maneuvered around the immense destroyer. Nobody was going to make him a prisoner of the First Order ever again.
This thing really moves.
He shook his head in admiration. Fine engineering knew no politics.
I'm not going to waste this chance. I owe some people in that ship a little payback. We'll take out as many weapon systems as we can.
The trooper had expected to run as far and as fast as the TIE fighter would take them.
Shouldn't we go for light speed as soon as we can?
A tight, humorless grin crossed Poe's face.
Someone on that ship called me the best pilot in the Resistance. I wouldn't want to disappoint him. Don't you worry. I'll get us in position. Just stay sharp and follow my lead.
He paused only briefly.
How about this? Every time you see the destroyer, you shoot at it.
Still unhappy with the direction their escape had taken, FN-2187 relaxed ever so slightly.
I can do that.
It wasn't a ship, Poe told himself as he gleefully manipulated the manual instrumentation. It was a part of him, an extension of his own body. As fire began to lance out toward them from the immense starship, he whirled and spun the TIE fighter, utilizing predictors as well as his own skills to avoid the blasts. Taking them underneath the mothership, he danced back and through gaps and openings, executing maneuvers beyond the abilities of all but the best pilots. Several skirted the edge of believability. Poe didn't care. He was free, and he was flying. Behind him, the renegade trooper unleashed blast after blast, triggering explosions in a frenzy of random damage that could only panic and confuse those on the vast vessel above them. A brace of cannons loomed ahead, but the trooper seemed content to fire indiscriminately at their surroundings. That needed to change, Poe knew, or they would never get the chance to jump the light speed.
Damn it! A target is coming to you! My right, your left! You see it?
Targeting controls brought the major weapons emplacement into bold view on one of the trooper's screens.
Hold on! I see it!
He readied himself. then unleashed fire at the precise moment when aptitude interlocked with instrumentation. The whole gun emplacement erupted in a rapidly shrinking fireball. Debris spun around.